by allowing them to lead without us, have the green bean, here's some more green beans, you've got to eat your chicken next, or withholding something, like, I'm not going to give you more kiwi until you've eaten the other thing. By putting the food on the plate, you're deciding what you're feeding them, which would be a balanced, nutritious diet throughout the day. Well, when they're babies, they don't really necessarily eat more than a couple of times a day. But you're providing the food, and then you let them decide what order they're going to eat that food that you've given them at that meal, what order, how much of it, and if they're even going to eat it.
In this conversation, we talk about how to create healthy habits. We talk about picky eating, and we even talk about what to do when your child throws their food on the floor. If you want to join the conversation and ask your own questions or even get coaching from me, sign up to the Patreon.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast. Today, I have to add to our nutrition with Talia, also known as Family Snack Nutritionist on Instagram. But don't listen to me talk about her. I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell you a little bit about her and things that she does and where you can find her. Go ahead, Talia.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for having me on, Mr. Chaz. My name is Talia, and you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and TikTok, and I'm Family Snack Nutritionist across all of those platforms. And it's a real pleasure to be here. I'm a dietitian, and I specialize in feeding children and raising happy, healthy eaters. And a lot of what I do with clients is very similar to what, you know, Mr. Chaz does with behavior, with children's behavior. There's always some nutrition that comes up in terms of what children are eating, but there's a lot of behavioral and parenting issues that come up around food and nutrition that we work on, both mindset of the parent and the behaviors with the children. So I can't wait to answer some of your questions today.
Yeah, well, let's get right into it. Kind of general, let's start general, right? How do you create healthy habits in a household? Alliteration.
Well, it really starts, and this is a common misconception, is a lot of parents think is it too early to start when they start eating foods and solids when they're about 6 months old? And that is the perfect time, because the goal here, I like to look at the long-term goal. The long-term goal is that we raise a teenager and an adult that has a healthy relationship with food, meaning they listen to their internal cues. When does their body tell them that they're hungry and full, and letting them stop on their own? So whether you go the baby-led weaning route, where they're feeding themselves finger foods, or you do the spoon feeding, it's really essential to really tune in to what your baby is telling you. If they're turning their head away and they don't want the spoon, or they're just, you know, exploring the food, they don't need prompting with, you know, have a bite, have another bite. And really avoid, if like one of the top tips, I'll just say it right from the beginning, is to really tune into what your kid is saying and allow them to tell you when they are done or when they don't want something. So rather than, a lot of parents will say, like, just have one more bite, or have three more bites of this thing before I give you your fruit, or, you know, a dessert or something. Let them, it has to come from inside them, those intrinsic motivations. And when a parent is saying, have another bite, have this, it makes me happy, like, eat some more, that is an external motivator. And we don't want our children to grow up thinking that them eating food makes us happy. Them eating food is something that they have to do to satisfy their own internal hunger. And so just like if your spouse sat down next to you at the table and was looking over at your plate, and just, you know, if my spouse did this, Talia, you just, I've noticed that you haven't really eaten enough. Can you eat a few more bites for me? Because I just don't think you've eaten enough today. Or they look over and say, look, that's really too much. You've got to stop eating. That's like way too much food. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you've ate. How could you have possibly eaten so much? I'd be looking at my husband and my husband like, mind your own business. This is my plate, and I know when I'm full. Thank you very much. I don't need you to tell me those sorts of things. And so when we can look at it from an adult perspective, and how would we feel if someone was saying that to us and micromanaging our plate, like, Mr. Chaz, I've noticed that you haven't touched your green beans. They're very healthy for you, and you really need to eat those green beans. Why haven't you eaten your green beans?
I'm already starting to feel like my inner child is already starting to feel defiant. Like, I was going to have the green beans, but now that you're pushing them on me, like, maybe this is something that I don't want because you have to, you know, you're trying to push so hard for me to eat it. Like, I'm not too sure about these green beans. That's how I feel.
That's exactly right. And if you're out there listening and you're kind of like, oh, I hadn't thought of it like that before, you know, I want you at your next meal with your kid to kind of have my voice in your head saying, you know, how would you feel if your spouse was saying that to you? Or if you live with your parents and your mom said it to you, you'd be like pretty mortified. Like, why are you selling me so hard on these green beans? Like, yeah. What's wrong with them that you're like really pushing them on me? And, you know, when it is really hard to step back and say, you know, I do trust my child to eat their food. And it is hard, especially if you've got, you know, a fruit on the plate and the kid is just going to town on the fruit. You're thinking, oh, but they do need to eat other food. And, you know, what if they eat, 60 strawberries, then, you know, they don't eat the other food on their. Well, yeah. However, we have to trust our child that they will eat the other things. And often when we start to see the disconnect and like fixations, that children become fixated on certain foods, typically sweet foods and dessert type foods, it's usually because they've had that voice saying to them, you need to eat your other things. I'm not giving you more strawberries. I'm not giving you more chocolate. You need to eat your other food, or you can't. I'm not going to give you chocolate until you eat 3 more bites of your chicken. That's when, again, if we put ourselves in that situation, if we restrict things from ourselves, like if you're a parent who's ever been on a diet and you've restricted yourself from eating something, you have that voice in your head like, I really want that chocolate. And all you can do is think about the chocolate. It's this preoccupation, and it's the same with children. And so to answer your original question of raising a healthy, happy eater is by not having that restriction and not imposing those rules that we have for ourselves as adults, like, oh, you can't just eat strawberries. That's not okay. That's not healthy. And just letting the child lead, because they don't have that ingrained in them.
And a child will, and it sounds like too, from this conversation, the conversation I had previous this week, that we create a lot of the unhealthy habits, us trying to push so hard to create healthy habits, we inadvertently create unhealthy habits. And it sounds like if we make healthy meals, put it on the plate, put it in front of them and just put no pressure and just allow them and really not even worry about it too much and model it right too and eat it ourselves and sit down and have the conversation to eat. And also, you know, some education on it that in their themselves, that they will, most children will automatically learn healthy habits just because they'll learn to know when they're too full. They will automatically try the strawberries and the vegetables at some point and the protein. Am I right in this, or am I completely off base? Or what else can you add to it? There's like, yes, but no. What are your thoughts?
Well, it is a yes, but no, because every child is so different. And you know, The clients, I have clients all over the gamut in terms of, you know, some have older children that are 10 and some have kids that are 2 or 3, and every child is so different. But what I can tell you is by starting early, like right from 6 months when you start giving them solids to eat, the less you can say, the better. The less you can micromanage plates, the less you can encourage the eating, because children know, they have this instinct that they do know how to eat. And if you do go the baby-led weaning route or even the preloaded spoon and let them feed themselves with it, they know innately what to do. They're still practicing at the beginning. It's, you know, it's a lot of muscle coordination for a baby to swallow foods right at the beginning, because it's very different than, you know, sucking milk. But by allowing them to lead without us, have the green bean, here's some more green beans, you've got to eat your chicken next, or withholding something, like, I'm not going to give you more kiwi until you've eaten the other thing. By putting the food on the plate, you're deciding what you're feeding them, which would be a balanced, nutritious diet throughout the day. Well, when they're babies, they don't really necessarily eat more than a couple of times a day. But you're providing the food, and then you let them decide what order they're going to eat that food that you've given them at that meal, what order, how much of it, and if they're even going to eat it. So I want to go back and make sure I answer your question. Yes, some children do have fears around certain foods, and it depends on the child. We are naturally like, oh, what's that? It looks funny. It looks different. Especially if you can put yourself in your child's position, they've never seen this type of food before, and they've never tried it. They've never touched it. It's a very intimate thing to pick up something and then put it into your mouth. I mean, again, I love to put this into the perspective of, you know, for a parent, imagine you go to a different country where they eat. You know, I went to Oaxaca in Mexico a few years ago and ate grasshoppers for the first time. That's something that if you're listening in America, Australia, Europe, maybe you've never had grasshoppers before. Or think of something like, it could be snails or chicken feet or stinky tofu or something, anything that you've never had before. And it has a strange smell. It looks strange. You know, you've never seen it before. A grasshopper is like, you know, it was quite confronting. And if you're naturally adventurous, I did try the grasshoppers and ate them, no problem. But if someone had been there saying, these are grasshoppers, they're really good, here you go, eat them. Like, I'm giving one to your mouth, like, open up wide. I'd be like, whoa, 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 whoa. I want to look at this first. I want to maybe touch it, and maybe I want to break it in half and look at it, smell it before I want to just like stick it in my mouth. You know, yeah. Again, it's a really intimate thing to put something strange that you've never seen in your mouth. And that's... Yeah. The same experience that a child is going through. So yeah.
And you know, and that actually brings me to another question. I love, you know, sometimes children have to explore the food a little bit before they, you know, act feel comfortable enough to, you know, really eat it or, you know, put it in their mouth. What about, you know, children? What are your thoughts on children who, you know, play with their food and play with, what are your thoughts about the response that we should have when children are playing with their food, right? And also add maybe in your thoughts or your answer, what should we do if we're on a time crunch as well and they're playing with their food? What's a healthy way to respond to it?
Okay. I'm going to preface this with something that I had thought about earlier when you had asked, I think it was the last question, which was, if you're a parent who's listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I have done all those things, I have bribed, I've withheld, I have told my kid that they can't have more, or, you know, something like that, I don't want you to feel guilty, because there's so much guilt in parenting, especially, I will gravitate because I work mostly with mothers. Is there is so much guilt around this, and you're doing those things, or you've done those things because you care so much about your child and you want them to eat those foods that you know are full of nutrients and that will help them grow, and you want them to eat all these healthy things. So please don't look at this as I've done everything wrong. I want you to look at this, and this is what I tell my clients and people that I get on discovery calls with to see if we're going to work together, is look, you've done all these things because you care. You can't change how you've done things in the past. All you can do is learn a different way of doing it and a different way to approach it, and acknowledge that you're going to try something different. So that's really important, because I don't want you to be thinking you've just done it all wrong. You care about your child, and because you care about your child, you're probably listening to this because you want to learn new tips and strategies. So keep that in your mind and be really positive in your self-talk. Hey, I have done that because I care about my kid, and I care about my kid, so I'm willing to try something different. So that's my little prefacing.
Yeah.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, to answer your question about playing with food, a large part of children who are, quote, picky eaters, and I'm using air quotes here, they need time to explore food, just like the grasshopper situation or the chicken feet or snails or something like that. It really helps when they can explore the food. And what I mean by that is not just at the table, is getting them involved in the preparation. If I know we're in a pandemic right now and not everyone can take their child to the supermarket, but if you can get them involved in the kitchen, help them, you know, they can help you wash the vegetables, they can watch you cut them, they can move things from the bowl into the pan, or they can help stir stuff. They are getting an exposure there. They are seeing the food. They have the opportunity to smell it, touch it, lick it of their own volition, where, again, it comes from inside them. Hey, that looks really interesting. Let me touch that zucchini and squash it a little bit. That's an exposure where there's no pressure for them to eat it or put it in their mouth. So when we say play with food, I'm all about playing with food, but I want to give you a different perspective of playing with food doesn't have to be at the table, because even if you have a no pressure mealtime where you're not there, hey, the green bean, here's a green bean, you know, there's still an expectation at the table that you sit there and eat, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in the kitchen and you're cooking something, there's no expectation to eat. It's just, hey, thank you so much for coming and helping me. You know, we're going to move some veggies from one thing to another. You're going to help, you know, you can get a child safe knife where they can practice cutting. Like, they're just touching the food. There's no expectation to do anything with it. So when playing with food, think about taking it away from the table. And then to answer your other question about on a time crunch, of course, the ideal here is that the child does have time to sit and explore the food, touch it, squash it, and, you know, play with it. I want you to think, if you're someone who is on a time crunch because you've got to get your kid to daycare, preschool, or you have a nanny coming or something like that, try, look at what your morning is like or look at what your day is like. How can you create a little bit of extra time in the morning to allow your child to have that positive experience? Because imagine too, again, putting it in your situation, if you sit down to lunch at a nice restaurant with somebody, well, no one's really doing that right now in the pandemic, but, you know, think about, you know, when the pandemic's over, you can go out and have a nice lunch. How would you feel if the chef came over and was like, I just need to let you know you have 10 minutes to eat and then you've got to go because this table is like, I've got to turn table. You'd be like, oh, I really want to enjoy this food, but I keep getting told that I need to eat quicker and this is very difficult, and it can cause you to feel stressed, and so your child can feel that too. It makes it less of an enjoyable experience. So do your best to carve out a little extra time for them. And, you know, if you have a kid that eats slowly, cap your meal time to about, you know, 30, maximum 45 minutes, which if you're on a time crunch, you're probably not doing 30 minutes, and that's okay. Do what you can to make the time that they have as relaxed as possible. Things like a visual timer. We're not very high tech. A sand timer where they can see it is really helpful.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love visual timers. That's like probably the number one thing that I always suggest for such a variety of reasons, to not just, you know, mealtime, just really any kind of transition, and just knowing, you know, being, you know, their ability. That time is really abstract, especially for children, like the sense of time. We say 5 minutes, and two, I will say, you know, to a child's credit, a lot of times us adults say 5 minutes and it's way past 5 minutes, and sometimes it doesn't even happen. So I very much understand from a child's perspective when we say 5 minutes or 10 minutes or what, them not really understanding what that means on top of time being, you know, abstract. So making it visual so they can see it running out is so helpful for them. And honestly, it's kind of helpful for me too. If I could like really see the time. I know that, and I generally know how much 5 minutes, 10 minutes is, but I remember the point in my time when I actually got a watch, you know, and I'm able to tell time. Obviously a 3, 2, 4, 5 year old can't tell time. Just having a watch and knowing what time it was and starting to time things and starting to get better at like really understanding the kind of like how much 5 minutes is, like it felt like a superpower for me. It felt like just getting a watch. It is the joke, like, what time is it? Like, it's time for you to get a watch. No, seriously. Like, and if you have a hard time at all just trying to like stay like on schedule, because sometimes like, you know, us, you know, ADHD people, like sometimes they're just like, it's sometimes time just runs together. I would highly suggest, I know it's simple and it does probably not what you came here to get, but I would so suggest getting a watch for yourself and a visual timer for your child or your children. And so I just wanted to kind of just jump in and just praise the visual timer.
You know, something that's so interesting, because I found myself, I have two daughters. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and the 4-year-old will often ask me how long I'm going to be doing something. And I really do try very, very hard to be like, I'm not going to say 1 minute knowing it's going to be 20 minutes. Because again, you know, for them, if you tell them 1 minute and it ends up being 20 minutes, they're like, wow, 1 minute's really a long time. I've been putting timers on for myself. We have an Amazon Echo, but you know, you can use an oven timer, you can use a microwave timer. It doesn't matter. Just, you know, I'll say, look, you know what? I'm going to put on a 10-minute timer for myself, and when it runs out, I will finish, because the time goes so quickly, especially as a parent. If you're working on something, it goes really quickly. I work from home, and my husband works from home, and we have the kids with us all the time. So it's like, anytime you have 5 minutes to yourself, it runs away like it's 1 minute.
Yeah. And
another thought for mealtimes, for time, is having some music on. That's it can be distracting for some kids. So you know your child, if they're going to be sitting there dancing and not eating, obviously don't use a song as something that you have. My daughters are pretty okay with having music on, and if they know a song, like, I don't know, the Ants Go Marching, that's the only song I can think of right now. Or, you
long
know,
song.
Like a long song when you have to hear it all day long, but it's a song that they are familiar with, and especially with the Ants Go Marching, it's actually a good example, because they're counting to 10, right? Mm-hmm. 10 by 10. They kind of have an idea of how long that song is and when it's coming to an end. So you can even use a song like that as a prompt, and you could sing it with them, like, okay, we're at 8, you know, 8 by 8, 9 by 9, and use that almost as, it's not visual. You can use a visual timer as well, but using the song as an example, when the song runs out, it's time to finish up. And then do, like, because the other thing is, if we put that time pressure on them, we don't want them to be shoving the food in at the last minute. So yeah. Giving them those little reminders of, hey, you're about halfway through your timer, And then when the timer runs out, give them a little bit of a period of like, take your last couple of bites. Yeah. You know, my daughter's a bit of a slow eater, so I'll tell her like, chew your food. You don't have to rush through it. It's all right. You know, you really want them to enjoy the food. And if you have a child that is I don't want to say a super slow eater. If your child's taking 2 hours to eat, that is a problem. But if they're a child that's kind of like a foodie and they're really chewing their food, that's something to be encouraged. Chewing your food helps with digestion. It means they're enjoying it. It gives their stomach time to get the brain signal from the stomach of, hey, I'm getting food and I'm getting full, and they can regulate themselves. So don't feel so pressured to rush them. Let yourself take a deep breath and say, take your last couple of bites, anything that's left. If you know it's something they really like, save it. Bring them a little bowl to put it in. Here, now that you're all done, here, put the leftovers in here. I'll put them in the fridge. You can have them, you know, tomorrow. I promise they'll still be there. Because if it's something that a child really likes to eat, like the strawberries, for example, tell them, you know, they're not going to get thrown out unless there's something wrong with them, but they'll save them. You can have them tomorrow. And then they won't feel that, oh, that restriction, like, oh my God, this is my favorite food and I'm never going to get this again. And that's stressful for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Take your last bites is like almost my catchphrase at lunchtime, because we are, you know, I work in a childcare and we are on a time crunch because, and that's a very stressful time for, you know, teachers, for children, for, you know, really everyone in the building. Honestly, that whole coming in from outside to transitioning for lunch to then transitioning to nap, doing the whole bathroom thing, that really does tend to be the most stressful time of the day for everyone. And so I try to be really mindful of it. And things happen sometimes. Sometimes lunch comes a little bit late. Sometimes someone has an accident. Sometimes, you know, things happen. And, you know, so I try to be very mindful in letting them know that, oh, take your last bites when there's about like 5 or 10 minutes left, take your last bites. And they know that, like, all right, I need to start finishing up. And, you know, like, I love that you're having conversation with your friends, but let's take our last bites. And that is pretty effective and does, you know, bring down the like, but I need to eat, but I need a little bit more. And I do try to make sure that we're giving them at least 30 minutes, well, between 20 and 30 minutes to eat, and just like, hey, we don't have a lot of time, because then, you know, breaks all the other adult things that don't have anything. That's not their fault, you know, but it does play a role in our stress level and how we respond. Yeah. Them and our patients with, you know, them playing with their food and their last bite. I want to ask two more questions before we get on off of here. Question one is, well, not one, but the first one, any tips for, because this is another common question that is asked, any tips or as many tips as possible for helping children, you know, stay at the table while they're eating? Because a lot of children get distracted, and you can even give different age groups, different tips for different age groups if you like, but I know a lot of children have a tendency to get distracted and get up and sometimes walk around with their food and eat. And, I know with a lot of times when I do have that conversation, there are environmental factors that play into that, but what are your thoughts on it? And you have any tips to kind of help us through that?
You asked me, do I have any tips? I could talk for about an hour on this. yes, I have a lot of tips. Well, first, let me clarify that this is kind of a showstopper for me. Kids do need to be sitting down while they're eating, whether they're having a picnic outside and they're sitting on the floor or they're sitting at a table or in their high chair. You know, you're the parent, so one of the things that you or a caregiver, one of the things that is your responsibility is the environment where they're eating and making sure it's a calm environment. So like you were saying before, just to get back to that, you know, if something is stressful because you're thinking in your head, oh, we've got to go to the toilet, then we've got to brush teeth, or then we've got to have a bath and we're running out of time, and they take our cues from us. So when we can stay calm and just remember, you can get through the toilet, you can get through lunch, you can do all those things, and, you know, find a second to just calm yourself, because they take cues from you. And so with we don't want kids walking around. It can increase the risk of choking and also distracted eating, where they're not really tapping into those internal cues of what's going on in their body because they're distracted. They're looking at, you know, they're going down a slide, or which can increase the risk of choking. They're going down a slide, they're doing something else. You know, that's a distraction that we want to minimize. So, which comes to my favorite word, boundaries. So you have to set that boundary. When we eat, we are sitting at the table, and I'm not going to let you get up and walk around. And if you have a child that doesn't want to stay at the table, I do actually, by the way, have a video that goes through this in more detail on my YouTube channel. If you go to Family Snack Nutritionist and type in, search the channel for sit, you'll find it. So I'm not going to get through everything, but setting the boundary that sitting, if you want to eat, you have to sit at the table. And at the beginning, you are going to get screaming and meltdowns. Of course, if your child's been able to wander around with food, it's like if you've always been able to do something and all of a sudden there's a new rule that you're not allowed to do that. Like, you're not supposed to go out and have dinner at a restaurant right now. Yeah, that's hard. You're going to sit home and have a really difficult time with that because it's a big change. It's okay that your child is going to say how much they hate it. I think everybody hates that they have to stay home right now in the same way. So, but that is a boundary, and the more you're consistent with it, the better the results are going to be for you. So being really consistent, if you have a child that is highly active, spend 5 minutes before lunch, let them know lunch is in 5 minutes. Let's put on Shake Your Sillies out and jump around the house or jump around preschool or jump around outside for 5 minutes to get all this energy out. Mm-hmm. So think about how you can set your child up for success. We are giving them this boundary, but what can we do to help them be successful? We want them, again, this comes into that being respectful to them. They're a child. It's our job to facilitate their success. Okay, you can't just expect a child who's highly active to sit down. Like, that's great that that's your boundary. But what can you do before that to make sure that they can be successful? Get them jumping around the house for 10 minutes or 5 minutes beforehand. Tell them lunch is in 5 minutes. Go and get anything, put away anything that you need to put away. Play with any singing teapots or singing toys or whatever it is. Like, go do whatever it is that you need to do. And ask them, you can even say, would you like me to put a 5-minute timer on so that it reminds you? Give them that option. If they don't want the timer, then you have to time it on your watch, you know, 5 minutes. And, you know, then come back and give them that cue. Okay, one more minute, finish up. And then if they need help coming to the table, go over and gently, you know, take their hand or pick them up and let them know. And make the transition as soft as possible. So I'm thinking if you're at home, you can show them the things that you've prepared for them, hold them, you know, bring them over to the table. If they're a little bit older, you know, 3, 4, or 5, they can go over and look. Hey, look, you know, they can help carry the food to the table so that they have that. They are making the transition with the food. They've picked out their cutlery. They come and sit at the table. You can push them in, or, you know, finding ways that you can help them with that transition. Come pick your cutlery, hold their hand, bring them over. It's time. You know, if they're having a hard time coming to the table, they're telling you they need your help. And so staying really calm, because the last thing you want to do is give them a huge emotional response right before they eat, because then, you know, think of a time that you've been highly emotional to something. You don't feel like eating right afterwards. If you have a fight with your spouse, like your hormones go a bit, you know, you get a release of cortisol and adrenaline, and that suppresses your appetite. So if you're going to do that, you know, if your child's going to have that response, they're not going to want to eat anything because they're not going to feel hungry. So do that soft, gentle take. I'd rather you take 5 minutes to help them transition peacefully than saying, okay, nah, time to come to the table. Nah, stop that. I'm going to pick you up and like drop you in your chair. Nah, push you in, eat, and then meltdown. And then the meltdown is probably going to take longer than the 5 minutes. It would take in to just be a little bit more gentle, patient. Let's put that away. Let's put this away. Okay, let's pick a spoon. Do you want this spoon or this spoon? And then, you know, gently come to the table, hold them, have a look. This is what I've prepared for you today. Point to the different things on their plate before you sit them down so that it's not so confronting. Imagine if someone, like, Imagine if you went to the Cheesecake Factory and the waiter took you to your table and said, okay, here's your food. I've already ordered it for you. You've got this part, this thing, you've got that thing. Here you go. Like, put you into the seat. Here you go. Here's a knife. Here's a fork. Here you go. Go on. Eat, eat, eat. You'd be like, oh. Take it slow. You have time to sit down at the table. Look at your food, you know. I think of my Labrador who just, you pour the food in and she just goes face first in there. But no person really does that. You need that time to transition. So do that with them and take that extra few minutes to make that transition smooth.
I love all the examples so that us adults can kind of relate to what we sometimes, you know, put children through with all the best intentions.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I don't believe any parent has poor intentions. If parents are bribing or begging their kid to eat, it's not because they have a bad intention. They want their child to eat. And it's giving up that control that can be really, really difficult, because food is tied in with so many emotions as adults. And that's where a lot of parents go wrong, in that they tie, you know, my worth as a parent is on you eating those green beans. But that's not the case. And I want you to ask me your last question. I do have two online courses that are available, and one of them is called Mealtimes Without Meltdowns, and that goes through like a lot of what I've been talking about, how to tie in the behavioral aspects and how to work on your own mindset as the parent, because so much of this is not just about your child. It's also about you thinking, oh, how would I feel about my spouse reminding me 30 times about my green beans? I wouldn't like that. Okay, so I've got exercises in there to really help you alter your mindset so that you can bring a sense of calm and confidence to mealtimes. And the other course I have is if you have a child that has a fixation on sweets or desserts, or you're not sure how to handle desserts because you are, you know, that's the temptation, is to bribe kids. Like, I'll give you your dessert. It's like such an easy thing. I'll give you the dessert if you eat those green beans. But that's not the approach I recommend taking, because that increases the fixation. So that is all available. You can, when you find them on, you know, follow me on Instagram, Family Snack Nutritionist. They're all there. But okay, I wanted to let you know that there are other resources to get this help.
Appreciate it. Thank you for plugging that in there. You know, this is the place I always say, I don't think I said in the beginning of this one, but I say that, you know, welcome to Mr. Chas's Leadership Parenting and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to people to help you on your parenting journey. And I, you know, so definitely follow her. She's definitely, if you're struggling with, you know, with eating, with food, with mealtimes at all, definitely follow Talia, follow her YouTube. I'm going to ask my last question before you leave, though, because I need to go back in and finish and do a break for someone. And I know that you don't have a lot of time as well. So my last question is, what about, you know, when children are throwing their food? You know, what is that communicating to us, and how do we respond in a healthy way?
That's a really good question. And I'm going to give you as many tips as I can in the last couple of minutes. And I'm also going to let you know that I have several videos on YouTube that are specifically about throwing food. If you type in food throwing or throwing into my channel, they'll come up. I think there's three on there right now. Because there are things that you can do in the moment, and then there are things that you can do afterwards as well. And another one is working on your mindset. Because, yeah, it's horrendously annoying to have to pick food up off the floor as the parent. And I worked with a client whose child was doing that, and she was getting so, you know, angry and frustrated that she's having to pick up this food. And her son knew that this was a problem, like she didn't like this. So it actually exacerbated the situation that he kept throwing the food to get a reaction, because that's an uncomfortable place when we're giving our child a reaction that is out of anger or frustration because we're not calm. So when you can be calm in this situation, they're trying to communicate something with you. Often it's that they are finished eating. Often this type of thing happens towards the end of the meal. And you know, I go through this on my YouTube video in more detail, but it's the 1, 2, 3 of I give you a warning. And it's not a warning, it's talking as calmly as I'm talking now. hey, Jimmy, I see that you want to throw the food. Of course, you want to try and intercept the hand before it throws the food. I see that you want to do that, and I'm not going to let you. Try to avoid saying, we don't throw food. Tell them what you want them to do and what you're not going to let them do. Please keep the food on your plate, and then with your gentle hand, I'm not going to let you throw that food on the floor. And then you can say to them, are you finished eating? And then calmly wait for a response. Are you finished eating? If they say no, you can say, okay, but when you throw your food, that tells me that you are done eating. Are you still eating? Okay. If you want to keep eating, you know to keep your food on the plate, on the placemat, or you know, wherever you want them to put their food at the moment if they don't want it. Give them somewhere to put it if they don't want it. But they are trying to communicate something with you. So try to look at what the communication is and at what point in the meal it's happening as to why it might be happening. So look at it from a really calm perspective and then give them the directive. And then don't be afraid to end the meal if they keep throwing the food. Again, this is not a punishment. It's not punitive. It's not, you threw your food and now I'm going to wash you up, you little brat. It's not about that. It's, I see you threw the food again. That tells me that you're all done. Like, narrate it to them, as there's so much narrating in parenthood. I'm going to go wash you up now. Gently pick them up out of their chair. This is a very gentle thing. It's not, I'm punishing you. You're awful. I'm going to like make this as awful as possible and then you won't do it again. That's not how it's going to be. You have to be gentle. Take them, if I take my kids to the sink and we wash our hands there, they're screaming, they're crying, they maybe didn't expect you that you were going to do that, especially if it's the first couple of times you're doing it. You can even say to your child, like with my two-year-old, which I did with her when she was, you know, 12, 14 months old as well, hey, was that surprising? You didn't think I was going to pick you up. I know. Did that make you upset? Yeah, no, I totally understand. You weren't expecting that. Next time, you know, keep the food on your placemat and then you can stay at the table and then, you know, pick them up and give them a hug and say it again to them. I know. And now, you know, next time you'll keep your food on the table and then you can stay at the table and I won't wash you up because I know you're still eating. Go through the whole circle with them of what happened and how they can do it next time so that they can be successful and stay calm. Use that as a point, you know, give them a hug. Don't just put them down and be like, now I've got to go clean up all your food or whatever. You know, that was surprising. You weren't expecting that. Maybe that's why you're crying. I get that. And next time, you know, you keep your food on the table, right? And then you can stay at the table to keep eating. Really connect the dots for them and be, you know, give them that hug. They're not doing it to upset you, even though it feels like that might be the case. Oh, they're defying me. No, they just want to know where the boundary is. And you've got to give them that really firm boundary. Yep, I really am going to wash you up if you keep throwing your food.
Yeah, yeah. Man, so much communication. And I talk all the time about behaviors, communication. And, you know, when we really see it that way, then we're able to really hear what our children are saying, even if they're not using words, even if they're nonverbal. When we're really looking to open our ears, to really open our eyes to their communication, to figure out what they're trying to say, and also communicate back to them about what's happening. I loved the part about, you know, retelling the story, because that just reconnects, you know, all, you know, the neurons in their brain of just what happened. And it's that's the lesson, just telling the story and not in, and again, they're not in a punitive, like, you need to do better. Like, I told you how many times I need to tell you, but like, this is, you know, this is what happened. This is what you're, you know, what you communicated to me. This is how I received it. And this is what happened. And they'll be more likely to think about that, you know, next time when they're thinking about, you know, throwing their food or their cup. And I look at that as that's kind of the natural consequence of things that you didn't really impose it. Like, I can't really give you the, like, you threw it on the floor, like it's gone now. Like, that's what happens. And for us, it's, you know, that's a big lesson, especially for younger children. I'm thinking especially children who are like younger than three. Mm-hmm. You know, they may not even really think about the fact that if they throw their food that they can't eat it anymore. Yeah. Right? You know, still picking up food off the floor and eating it. So
remembering that children under three, even ones that don't have speech yet, talking to them like they understand everything, because they do understand a lot. Your kid is smart. Your kid is really smart. I don't know your kid, but I know they're really smart. They can understand. They can understand a lot. And, you know, one of the things that you can help with them connecting the dots, if they start doing that behavior next time at the meal, for example, my daughter has recently decided that she thinks it's funny to turn herself around in her high chair to look out the window. And I did end her meal recently with that. And then when she started doing it at dinner that same day, I said, "Hey, do you remember earlier today you were turning around in your chair? Do you remember what happened after that?" And she said, "I washed her up." And even if your child can't say it, you can tell them, "Do you remember I washed you up? You didn't like that. Here's what you can do, remember? Turn around in your chair." So that's kind of serves as their verbal warning and that little reminder of, "Oh yeah, that did happen this morning." And then they make the choice.
Yes. Thank you so much, Talia, for coming out, for sharing your knowledge, your perspective, your stories. Any last things you'd like to say where people can find you?
Find me. I'm on all the platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. I've got over 50 videos on YouTube. I've been going strong all year with lots of questions that I get about picky eating and behaviors, how to reframe your mindset, intuitive eating, all types of things like that. Family Snack Nutritionist. And I have recently in the last couple of months started taking one-on-one clients. I'm fully booked, but if you want to work with me, you can send me a DM on Instagram and we can chat about what that looks like. And I have those two online courses as well that you can find from, there are links all over the place, but I'm primarily on Instagram.
Oh, well, great. Thank you so much for coming. And I will, let's stay in touch. Especially on Instagram. I think that's where I really follow you the most. But I gotta go do a break. So
okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Mr. Chaz. It was nice to speak with you. And same to everybody who's listening. Thanks for being here.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?